Hoochie Coochie Man. Willie Dixon, born on this day in July the 1st, 1915, in Vicksburg, Mississippi. One of the great blues men of all time who could play everything that you can imagine. He was also a boxer, Illinois State boxing champion. Could play the upright bass, the guitar, was a composer, and helped define the modern blues. Born in 1915, we celebrate his birthday today on this July the 1st, during our breaks, the great Willie Dixon. Reminding you, the Mark Steiner Show is brought to you in part by MeQ, Baltimore's credit union, offering a full range of financial services. MeQ, Baltimore's credit union, is helping its members and its community prosper. When you invest in yourself, MeQ invests in you. Remember, it's a credit union, not just a bank. It belongs to you, and money comes back in the end. More information, www.mecu.com, or you can log on to steinershow.org and click on their banner, MeQ, Baltimore's credit union. So we look at another Supreme Court decision here on the Mark Steiner Show. It's Harris versus Quinn. Very controversial decision says that public unions, public employee unions, cannot necessarily organize people who are not full-time workers and getting paid by the state, like home health care workers. A case brought by a woman who was the mother of a child she was taking care of and had to join the union, and she opposed to join the union. It gets deeper than that, and it's up some broad questions here which we're going to examine. We're joined by Patrick Moran, who is president of AFSCME Maryland's Council 3. Good to see you, Patrick. Welcome to the studio.
Thanks for having us, Mark.
Trevor Burris is with us. He's research fellow at the Cato Institute's Center for Constitutional Studies and editor of A Conspiracy Against Obamacare. Trevor, welcome. Good to have you with us.
Thanks for having me.
And you all can join us here at 410-319-8888. Write to us here, steinershow@gmail.com. You can log on to our Facebook pages. You can also tweet me at Mark Steiner, 410-319-8888. A number of you who listen to this program, I know, are home health care workers. I'd like to hear what you think if you're listening today and can have a moment to sit up and to take a chance to call us at 410-319-8888. You were a major part of our series we did a few years back called Just Words, The Voices of the Working Poor. What are your thoughts? 410-319-8888. So, Trevor, let me begin with you on the phone. Tell us about the significance from your perspective of Harris v. Quinn.
Well, I think it was very important for the court to explain exactly who can't be unionized, because the unions have been trying to redefine the nature of what a public employee is. And I think it was important that the court come forward and say that unionization is a privilege granted by the state for limited purposes and can't just be extended to anything and anyone who happens to receive money from the state. And I'm not against unions, but I don't think everyone should be unionized just because they get money from the state. So it was good that the court clarified that.
So, and this seems to be a case, and you can respond in a couple of ways here, Patrick, that kind of limits the ability of public service workers' unions to unionize, and I mean limits their scope.
Right. I mean, the bottom line on this thing. You know, if you tap into America and you talk to folks that do this work across the country, Mark, you know, they want a way to advocate for their clients. They want a way to, you know, as we saw in Illinois, people are making, and here in Maryland, $1 to $3 an hour if you break it down, or less than minimum wage even when it was in the $6 range doing this work. They unionized and they came together in order to have a greater say and to advocate for their clients and their loved ones. And there are a few people that didn't like that, and that was the case. And you know, it's funny to me that we constantly hear the conservatives in the Supreme Court and their ilk talk about states' rights, states' rights, states' rights, but then they want to run to the federal government at that, you know, which is counter to everything they're spewing, and go after something like this.
Go ahead.
So, can I get in on that?
Please do. That's why you're here.
Sorry?
Please do. That's why you're here.
I want to point out that we've had a recent event. I think that people who voluntarily want to join a union should be allowed to join a union. But we recently had Michigan pass a right to work law, and they had a home-based healthcare unionization system not dissimilar from Illinois. And after the workers were allowed to leave the union if they wanted to, 80% of them left the union. And I think that this is demonstrates that perhaps the support is not as high as Patrick is saying. Perhaps it's a it's a little bit less than that.
Well, Mark, on that end, you know, probably 80% of the population wouldn't pay any taxes if they have the choice to. If they didn't have to pay for our roads, if they didn't have to pay for our correctional officers, if they didn't have to pay for social workers. I mean, so that argument is nonsense. I mean, if they didn't have to pay to get their trash picked up, they wouldn't do it. So, you know, I know that everyone at the Cato Institute espouses the free market and that we ought to pay as you go along, but we don't live in Somalia, and no offense to the people who live in Somalia, but I came up here on a road that was financed by taxpayer dollars, and I didn't see a horde of warlords stopping me at every mile asking me for money. I made it up here safely and securely, and there weren't, you know, there weren't starving children lining the roads, you know, begging for selling chewing gum. The fact of the matter is we have a society where we have to pay for things. And if people are going to bargain things and people are going to get something out of that, then we have to expect that there's going to be some payment as a result of that. And I know that that might pain Trevor to hear that, but that's society and that's reality.
Trevor?
You really just went from unionizing home healthcare workers to Somalia. I mean, that you really did, with no steps in between that about the basic questions of
the basic questions here, Mark. Okay.
Well, we're not going to debate roads here. We're debating who is allowed to tax people and why, or who is allowed to forcibly extract money from people and why. I mean, you really went all the way, and we got to go back like several steps to the question. So, for example, if I decided that immediate 10 square blocks around me, all those people needed to pay me so I could provide them certain services, and then I got a privilege from the government to start extracting money from them and giving them things that perhaps they don't want or things that only a certain group of them, just because the government gave me a privilege to take money from the immediate 10 square blocks around me. Well, you'd have to limit that at some point. We're not talking about government. We're talking about unions. Very different. You went from unions to anarchy. We got to go in between here at some point.
Mark, this is about power at the bottom line. And the fact of the matter is working people have power with the union. They have the voice and the ability to advocate for themselves and for their positions in life. And this is about attacking that. It's about attacking working people and their ability to have that voice at work, about having their a say in the process, and that's what they went after.
Well, let me ask this question. A couple of questions. A question I have about this for the union, also this larger question I want to raise for all of you. But let me read these tweets that have gone back and forth here about the discussion we're having now. One tweet came in, is Harris v. Quinn a blow to the public unions? And we received one tweet coming in saying, Cato was wrong. SCOTUS said independent providers can't be required to pay fair share. They can vote for a union and have a contract. And Jerry writes back, I don't think so. The SCOTUS purposely kept the decision narrow. Your thoughts on that debate between our tweeters?
Well, they did keep the decision narrow, but again, they set up the goalposts, Justice Alito did, in order to obliterate and drown public sector unions altogether. I mean, that's their goal at the end of the day, because again, it comes down to power, about working people having power or corporations having power. And you know, their acolytes on the Supreme Court want to make sure that the corporations and the CEOs consolidate that power.
Trevor?
This power game is just, this is a little bit of piffle here. I think that really, that what we're talking about, and of course, there is a power element here, which is, of course, that the unions are always playing a power game. They, in this case, the SEIU, who had been denied numerous times from being given the privilege to unionize home healthcare workers in Illinois because this court in 1985 that ruled that they were not public workers for the purposes of the statute, they're not even federally defined as public workers. They went to Rod Blagojevich, who, of course, has spent time in federal prison as a corrupt the corrupt politician, and asked him to figure out a way to unionize people, get around this little inconvenience that they're not actually working together in a office together. And, of course, the SEIU wanted that power in the form of money. So basically, Rod Blavis set up a dummy corporation that said that they were now all employees of a dummy corporation to help get around this issue. And then the SEIU extracted money from non-dissenting workers. Now, if my opponent is actually telling me that he and other unions should be allowed to steal money from non-consenting workers because they're right, then we really have a much more deeper dispute than anything else. I mean, Cato, I think we're right, and I would love the opportunity to just take $10 from everyone, because what we have to say is so important that I would like everyone to give us $10. I'm going to get approval from the government to get $10 from everyone, and you can get the $10 back if you dissent. Here's 37 forms to fill out. So you're just sort of subsidizing us a little bit. That is absolutely crazy to say that they deserve to steal from people because he thinks he's right.
Well, Mark, it's great because Trevor exactly makes my point here. The fact is that in Maryland, California, Michigan, Illinois, Wisconsin, Washington, Massachusetts, New York, New Jersey, Oregon, all of those states legislated. So legislated, passed laws enabling people to do this, enabling home care workers or child care workers to organize a union. And they did in every single one of those states by Democratic majorities when they had elections. Okay. So I guess, if he's opposed to the democratic process and you want to go his route saying people are forced to give money to them, well, and they pass contracts again.
Well, there's two questions here I have, and one has to do with public unions and the benefits public unions give or not give, and the battle going on around public unions. But let me start with this question about to you, Patrick Moran. Just strategically speaking, it seems to me, I mean, I've interviewed a lot of women who, or mostly women, who are home health care workers, mm-hmm. in a whole series we did called Just Words. And I heard and heard their stories and why they wanted to unionize. And I was doing the process of the battling the right to union here in the state of Maryland. But one of the things I thought about reading this particular decision of Harris v. Quinn was that did the union make a mistake by stretching too far when it came to Harris? I mean, in that you have a woman here who was... a woman here who is the mother of a child, and mm-hmm. she's taking care of her own child at home, right. and then being forced by the union to kind of join the union, and they came to her door. Was this a case that kind of obfuscates the larger issue of women healthcare workers? Mm-hmm. Because clearly, I mean, when I read her story, I was like, well, why are they making this mother join a union when she's just trying to take care of her kid? Do you know what I'm saying? I mean, but this is a strategic error on the union's part.
Right. Well, here in Maryland, they have the option of opting out. That's one thing. But two is Ms. Harris is going to benefit from the work that the members of the union do on her behalf. They are going to, you know, just like you are going to benefit from your neighbors and everyone else paying taxes in order to get your trash picked up. You're going to have a cleaner neighborhood. She's going to have more money and more resources to aid and care for her child at the end of the day.
I hear that, but what I'm saying is, to me, it seemed different than having people who are home health care workers, and that's what they do for their living every day, working in people's homes, taking care of people who need to be taken care of, and a mother who's just taking care of her child and using every dime that comes in to take care of that child.
Right. And, well, to my knowledge, she's given money from the state to do
right.
that. Correct.
Right.
Correct. And she's going to get more money from the state to do that as a result of her fellow home care workers, you know, advocating on her behalf.
I understand that. I just thought that this particular case reminded me of the other case in Maryland with Purdue versus and not taking on Purdue, but taking on the small farming family instead. And sometimes
right.
I think those are strategic errors when people are trying to make a point. Trevor, your thoughts?
I'm interested. You will get more money. There's a lot of ways people can get more money from the state by different organization. We could play this power game, or we could invoke principle about questions about whether or not and when someone who is a non-consenting person, because unions are not the state, they are a privilege granted by the state, and when a non-consenting person should not be allowed to have a private organization, the union, take money from them. We're just alighting over this basic core question of union, of how unions are created and what they do. Now, the question is, to sort of reify it and come back, the question that Harris dealt with is who shouldn't be unionized, right? Like, so, for example, a doctor could take all Medicaid and Medicare patients and be paid only by Medicare and Medicaid. And there's another doctor, two blocks away who does the same thing. Should it be the case that those all the doctors who take Medicare and Medicaid payments only should be unionized against their will? If some percentage of doctors vote on this, and then they don't work together, they can't bargain over the conditions of employment, the hours, the employers are still the patients. But there has to be some principled limit of who can unionize and who can forcibly extract money from people who aren't consenting.
Well, let me ask this question, Trevor.
Uniquely to the state.
You keep using this term of forcibly taking people's money. But the reality is, if a union is representing, let me ask you this question. If a union is representing workers in a particular sector, and all those mm-hmm. workers benefit because the union has negotiated a contract where they originally might be making $3 an hour, are now making $12 an hour as home health care workers, and everybody is benefiting from that, or if teachers who are working in a school are benefiting because the union negotiated a contract that it guarantees health care and guarantees higher wages and guarantees certain protections, and all employees are benefiting by that, then why shouldn't they all contribute to the union? That seems to be different than how is that forcing somebody to do something against their will? Or should those people who don't want to join the union not get the same benefits as the union workers themselves?
Well, I mean, actually, there is, interesting work being done on alt-labor and minority union representation and good, interesting work being done on how to do that. But I don't think this idea of free riders is compelling as people think. There are free riders all over society in different ways who enjoy benefits in other ways that they don't pay for. And the cost that we're talking about here is, of course, it's one of the fundamental costs we're talking about is whether we're going to trade some of the free rider problem off against forced political speech, for example, which is one of the issues that was happening in Harris v. Quinn. I mean, they would be able to get their agency fee only, but the union is still participating in the political dialogue and benefiting from that. So we're talking about two values being traded off there. And I think forced political speech is a huge problem that the unions are participating in all the time. And I don't think people should be allowed to compel views against their will.
But the problem with this is, and the problem in that line of argument is that, as a taxpayer, okay, corporations who are now, I guess, people, according to the Supreme Court, get all sorts of tax breaks that I am, as a taxpayer, forced to pay for. So if he wants to go down that path and talks about principle, as he brought before, then end corporate welfare and let's have free speech for every individual and not corporations who aren't individuals.
Let's have
if you end that, then we can have unlaughable is the best way of saying it, discussion about, forced speech and the First Amendment and things of that nature. But this notion, when businesses create a union called the Business Roundtable or the Chamber of Commerce, which our taxpayers end up supporting through these corporations as they get the tax breaks, there's no foul here by the Cato Institute or any of their acolytes. If a union member tries to express their will and tries to get involved in the political process, then all of a sudden we have to raise the red flags.
Well, let me ask you both this question.
I'm against that too. I mean, and you can look at Cato's unblemished track record of being against corporate
Cato is financed by corporations.
No, we aren't actually. Go look it up. Okay. Go look up how much money we got from corporations. I invite you to.
Or the Koch brothers.
We are one of the least. We get 1.8% of our money from corporations. Corporations do not like us.
But you do get funding from a lot of very wealthy people who run corporations.
Right. Yes.
I invite
who
you to go look up Brookings.
Who get their money from corporations.
Ledger. Brookings
exactly.
Institute got more money from oil last year than Cato got at all from corporate donations.
Oh, there's no question in my mind about that. But I think most of these think tanks, I mean, the Koch brothers back you, right? And as do many other
Sheldon Edelson,
all these people who make, right?
So, well, that was I was addressing the corporation issue.
They get their money from corporations. They own the corporations, exactly.
I mean, so I'm just saying that.
It seems to me that what you're saying is that if everyone is going to be doing illicit things that are robbing people, then it's just a question of who can rob people the best. I'm just against people robbing people, including corporations.
Okay, I'll just sound
you. So why don't you stand against that and stand against unions robbing people? We just should be against people robbing people against their will.
See, the great thing here, Mark, the great, wonderful thing I love about this, Mark, is the fact of the matter is people voted on this. This was legislated, and then the workers themselves voted on a contract. The workers themselves were involved in the process. That's not the case with the corporations and the line that Trevor is spewing here. So he can't answer that, and he can't say, oh, well, you know, that is wrong, but he wants to go down this line of comparing the corporations and the union in the same light.
But let me ask
you
both this
democratic
question.
Organizations.
Let me ask you both this question, and I think that is this really just not part of a larger battle taking place to first Trevor and then back to Patrick to weaken public unions? I mean, public union is probably the last powerful sector of the union movement in America because much of the other has been whittled down for numbers of reasons over the years. And isn't this really it? I mean, I was thinking about a dinner I had over the weekend where there were mostly kind of conservative people at this dinner who make a lot of money who were really offended by public unions and thought, we want to see this case society here because we have to whittle down their power. Isn't that really the bottom line here, why this is being not the woman who took it, but the people who funded her case? Isn't this really a battle to destroy public unions? Honestly,
I will agree that the principles that I am espousing here, that I espouse for both corporations and unions, and ending corporate welfare, ending corporate privilege, ending the kind of tax breaks that corporations get, I want to weaken that, and I also want to weaken the privilege of the unions and the kind of tax breaks they get. Apparently, my article just would like for one specific segment, either the union side, to get the privileges and eradicate the corporate side. I'm for eradicating both.
Mark, this is about a corporatist agenda. You know, about the 99%, the plurocrats, having a corporate America run country by them, for them, where the 1% rule everything, versus a real America where people that are in the 99%, the Joe Sixpack and the Sally Blue Shirt, are running a democracy, are having a say in the process, having a voice in the electoral process. You know, unions are democratic organizations that are run by their members and they're voted on by their members. Corporations are not. And this is about that. It's about power for people and having a say in the process, going back, you know, to a time when the income levels were a little more or a little less disparate, as opposed to now, where it's run for and by corporations.
So we had a lot of tweets coming out. I'll just try to read a couple of them before the end of the hour. State workers in Maryland voted for fair share in 2012, and 9.3% voted again in 2014, 98.3%. Somebody's saying Cato is wrong. Workers vote for contracts with fair share. It's not stealing. It's a democracy. And another one coming in saying state employees in Maryland can opt out of dues if they object in political or for political or religious grounds. So very quickly, we only have like about a few minutes left here, right, in this segment. So very quickly, we go to start with Trevor Burrus. I mean, so what do you think the outcome of this will be? What will be the effect of this ruling from here on, and where do you think it's going to go?
Oh, I think the effect is very narrow, and I don't think that public sector unions should be afraid of their status simply because the Supreme Court, no matter how ideologues they might be on either side, doesn't like to stir up society too much. And especially for the amount of public sector workers out there who enjoy contracts and property rights that are in place, we're not going to see the Supreme Court destroy public sector unions. We're not going to see them decide another public sector union case for many years. It applies to these specific type of workers, but it's not going to apply much further than that.
Well, I happen to disagree with Trevor. They have set the goalpost to kick a field goal right through this thing. Alito has said that. He said that Abood, which is the case this is based on, is it's far overreaching, and you know, the fact of the matter is he's going for it. They expanded this to include Abood, where it had no place or no justification in being in this argument whatsoever. That is their goal. It is in their top 10 list of things to overturn, absolutely. And I'm willing to bet in the next 2 years we'll see this up on the docket again.
The overturning of Abood.
That is their goal, and that's what they're going to go for.
We're going to ask a question about opt-in notices and opt-in and opt-out.
We have, which is about out of time here, so we're going to put that on our website, too, because Abood is we didn't talk about that much, but it was a Supreme Court decision that found that non-union members may be required to pay membership dues in exchange for collective bargaining. That was that happened in 1977, and so we didn't actually let you know what he meant by saying.
Working people aren't going to quit here, Mark. We're going to keep on fighting for our rights, whether it's here or across America.
We do have to take a break here. This has been a great discussion, lively and important on both sides. Trevor Burrus is research fellow at the Cato Institute Center for Constitutional Studies and editor of A Conspiracy Against Obamacare. And Patrick Moran is president of Ask Me Maryland Council 3, this American Federation of State, County, and Municipal Employees. Good to have you both with us.
Thank you, Mark.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.
We're going to take a brief break, and it's time for Sound Bites. And we look at the state of the Bay. We talk about environmental justice with the National NAACP and more, and talk about gleaning. See what that's about. And we're going out with Luther Vandross, Never Too Much, the great voice of Luther Vandross, who passed away on this day. So we remember him with his music. That's what he left us. Thank you, Luther. You're at the top of my list, cause I'm always thinking of you. I still remember in the days when I was scared to touch you, how I spent my day.